This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
So, usually, something happens the day of my shiur, and that gives me something to talk about. But actually, this situation happened yesterday. A little boy came to my office with his parents. And the reason he came to my office with his parents is that he was struggling with something that a lot of us struggle. And that is davening, tefillah, praying to Hashem, because a lot of people don't know what they're saying. And so to just do lip service is very hard. And so a lot of kids and even adults, they go to shul, they go to daven because they have to, but they don't really have any connection. So this little boy's parents brought him because he doesn't daven. He doesn't daven. Very cute kid. So I said to him, there are two types of tefillah. There's a tefillah that we have in the book, Shachris, Mincha, and Ma'ariv, and Kriya Shema, all the different things that are written in the book. And then there's a tefillah, which is a personal tefillah, where a person talks to God. At the edge of your bed in the morning, at the edge of your bed at night, walking outside, thanking Hashem, connecting to Hashem. So I asked him if he does either one of them. Nope. He says, I don't read from the book, and I don't talk to Hashem. So I said, I told him, okay, number one, we have to understand. So even if you don't understand what you're saying, you're still supposed to daven, right? So how does that work? So I explained to him that if you go to an ATM machine and you want to take out money, right? So on Avenue M, you go to Chase Manhattan. Big ATM machine. And you stand in front of the ATM and you say, ATM machine, I love you. You are the best ATM machine in the whole Flatbush. You are amazing, and I cannot thank you for all the past times I came to you when I needed money and I had to go buy something to drink and I had to get on the subway and I had to buy, you know, whatever I needed, and you were always there for me. Could you give me $200? No, the ATM machine is not giving you anything. It's just going to sit there and look at you, and nothing's going to happen. But I really love you, and you're really special, and I really want to thank you. Could you give me $200? It's not going to happen. The kid's looking at me a little strange at the moment. I said, what do? You go up to the ATM machine, and you punch in a bunch of numbers, right? Your password. It says password. And you punch in whether it's your birthday. They tell you not to use your birthday because if someone steals your, you know, your identity, your license, your ID, you're in trouble. Random numbers, 13YXD, has no meaning. But once they become your password, when you punch those numbers in and you hit enter and you ask for $200, the money comes out. So the guy who's talking to the machine, nothing comes out. The guy who pushes in the password, he can get anything he wants. He can take money out, put money in, whatever he needs to do. It opens up, we call it tzinayros. It opens up the pipes. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov wrote three different passwords. One's called Shachris, one's called Mincha, one's called Ma'ariv. Each one of them is a password when you pray these words that opens up the pipes, the tzinoros, the gutters, the pipes. Shemayim runs, the health and all this stuff comes through, they call it tzinorim, pipes. And when you daven Shachris, even if you don't understand what you're saying, right? You don't know what you're saying, but Avraham Avinu put into Shachris, into the tefillah, and the Atzik Sayyidah put into the tefillah, that is your password. In the morning, your password to get things is Shachris. If you could just let Ruth sit over here. And your password for Mincha in the afternoon, right, is Mincha. And your password tonight for Ma'ariv is Ma'ariv. So I said to this kid, even though you don't know what you're saying, right, you should know Parashat Hamilos, but it's very hard. You can't do that all when you're a little kid. It takes a long time to learn it. Even if you don't know what you're saying, it's like a bomb. It's like a grenade that Avraham Avinu left Yitzchak and Yaakov. And when you daven in the morning, those words are your WXC13 that opens up your ATM machine. That's tefillah, that's printed, that's the word. Then there's a different tefillah. And that tefillah is not written. That tefillah is your own private prayer, where you're sitting at the edge of your bed and you're thanking Hashem, you're asking Hashem, you're praising Hashem, but it's not in a book. There's nowhere in the book. You're doing it from your heart. You're doing it from your soul. That opens up many things. So there's a story, and I told this to this little boy. And I've said it here before, but there's a lot of new people. I don't know how long ago I said it. Maybe it was a while. A story about a little newspaper boy. I don't know if anyone remembers that story. So in the old days, my days, so you didn't go to the corner store to buy a newspaper. There was a boy who needed money. He would take his bicycle. There'd be a basket in the front, a basket in the back. He would put the New York Times in there or in the New York Post. And at 4:30 in the morning, he would drive his little bicycle and he would take the paper and he would throw it against your door and it would land right on the welcome mat in your front door. And then people would go to work at 6 o'clock. So they had their coffee in the morning. They wanted to read the New York Times or whatever they were reading. So it had to be there at 4:30 because everyone was going to work otherwise. They wanted to sit and read while they're having their coffee. I remember I had a friend that did this. He had a penny a family a week. And he was happy because he did 20, 30 houses. He got 30 cents a week. In our days, he used to work for 30 cents a week. Yeah, and the public phone was only a nickel. It was a different day. So I remember the Coca-Cola machine at a quarter. A bottle of Coke at a quarter. So, and I'm not that old. So this little boy used to get up every morning and take his bicycle with his newspapers, and he was a newspaper delivery boy. And it's an interesting thing because, not that you're baseball fans, but I don't remember if it was Sandy Koufax or which pitcher it was, and they, one of the superstars, Hall of Famers, and he said that he became a pitcher because he was a newspaper boy, and he was able, while he was riding, to throw the paper while he was moving and hit the middle of the door every time. He realized, I got a talent. If I could hit a door with a newspaper on the move, I could throw a baseball. And he became a big pitcher. So, you know, everything in life, what you do, you have to think about it. It can always be used for something. You know, I talk about this a lot. Whatever you do in life, you can channel into other things. And I don't remember who the pitcher was exactly. Maybe it was, I don't know. I think it was Sandy Koufax. Maybe it wasn't Sandy Koufax. Okay, but anyway, so it happened to have been that where he delivered the paper was the capital city of the country. So one of the stops that he had was the garden of the king. The king would sit in the garden at 4:30 in the morning when nobody would be bothering him, having his coffee. And this little boy would not throw the paper at the king. He would actually go to the king and give him the paper. And every day, this boy would say, "Thank you very much. You're the greatest king." He was a little kid. He was 7 years old, 9 years old. "You're the greatest king. I want you to know that my basketball team is winning. And I just want to thank you that I have a great public school that I go to. And everything is so beautiful in your kingdom. Thank you." And then he would leave and continue doing his newspapers. Now, this boy was very poor. And his father was a farmer. He was a potato farmer. And his father used to sell potatoes at a very cheap price to the poor people. But in the same country, there was a prime minister who sat right by the king, number two. And he was also a potato farmer. He owned a lot of farms of potatoes. And he called the little boy's father, and he said to him, "Listen, you are selling much cheaper than me, and everyone's buying from you. If you don't raise your prices to at least my price, you're going to end up in the dungeon." He said, "Well, I can't raise my price. If I raise my price, the poor people will have nothing to eat." So he didn't raise his price. One day, the police show up. "We're here to arrest you." "Arrest me? What'd I do?" "We heard from a reliable source that you are behind the rebellion against the great king, and we're going to throw you into a deep dungeon." And so they did. This little boy's father. But he wasn't worried. Because his best friend was the Minister of Agriculture. And the minister of agriculture was very close to the king. So he called him to the dungeon and he said, listen, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why I'm in a dungeon. I never started a rebellion. That's ridiculous. Go to the king, tell him who I am, that you're my friend, and get me out of here. No problem. We'll get you out of here. Within 24 hours, you're out. So this minister of agriculture goes to the king. And on the way to the king, sitting in front of the king's room, is the second in command, is the prime minister. Prime minister says to this guy, the minister of agriculture, what are you doing? He says, I want to see the king. Why do you want to see the king? This guy, he's a very close friend of mine. He's sitting in the dungeon. And the prime minister was the one who put him there. So he knew that he cannot let him get to the king. So he said, listen, it happens to be that we're preparing for war. And the king told me that he can't see anyone because this is going to be a huge war, a world war. For the next 3 months, he's not seeing anybody. I'm really sorry. I'd love to help you, but I can't. So this guy goes back to the father and says, I can't help you. He says, but you can't leave me here for 3 months. I'll die. I have no food. I have nothing. I can't help you. They're preparing for war. Okay, don't worry about it. His other best friend was the king's lawyer who used to play golf with the king every Sunday. So he calls him. He says, listen, you're going to play golf with the king. You're my best friend. Tell the king that there's some guy put me in jail. I'm a good guy. So the lawyer's like, yeah, no problem. I'm the golf, companion of the king. He goes, prime minister sitting there. How can I help you? I'm going to see the king. Why are you going to see the king? There's somebody in jail. We're going to war. I'm really sorry. No can do. Comes back to the father of the kid. Says, I can't help you. There's a war going to happen and nobody can see the king. So now he's in big trouble. The next day, the kid's father didn't come home that night. His mother said, they put your father in jail. He said, for what? I said, I don't know. Somebody made up a story about your father, that he's rebelling against the king. So the next day, the kid, who every single day went past the king in the morning and gave him the newspaper and thanked him and smiled and was happy, goes by the king and he takes the newspaper and he says, here's today's newspaper, king, have a nice day. And turns around and walks away. Because he's in a lot of pain. His father was just taken away from him. The king says, excuse me, get back here. He says, yes, sir. He says, what happened to the good morning? I have the best team. You're the best king. What an unbelievable country. What's going on? What's bothering you? The little kid looks up at the king and says, I know that you sit here every morning because you don't want to be bothered. I'm not going to bother you with my problems. And the king says, no, you don't understand. You see, every single day, a whole day, people come to me with their problems. I need money. I need real estate. The bank's not giving me a loan. You have to change this law. I need this and I need that. He says, the only person that I see every day that doesn't ask me for anything is you. So if you're not happy, I'm not happy. So little boy, I need to know what's bothering you. So he looks up at the king and he says, well, if you're going to make me tell you, my father was arrested. Father was arrested for what? For starting a rebellion against you. But king, I know my father. He loves you. It's not true. Somebody made it up. Where is your father? He's in the dungeon. King says, now, you're going with me right now. Leave your bicycle here. We're going to the dungeon. And the king never went to the jail, to the dungeon. Shows up at the dungeon. Everyone's going crazy. What's the king doing here? Who's he here to see? Whatever it is. And the king walks in, goes over to this kid's father, says, let him out. He definitely didn't do anything. The kid's father comes walking out, and he sees that the king is walking with his son. Where does his son know the king from? His lawyer didn't get him out. His minister didn't get him out. His little 7-year-old schnitzel, little kid over there, got him out. Like, what's going on? So when we are saved from a situation, Jewish people make a su'udas haidah, a meal of thanks, a meal, thanking Hashem. So the father makes this huge su'udas haidah, and he invites everybody. He was in the dungeon, he would have died. He was saved. So the first guy to come to the student and say, "Duh," is the minister. And he walks over to the father of the boy and he says, "So here, someone got you out. I hear that the king came and got you out. So there is somebody greater than me in the kingdom. You have another minister who you never told me about, who is able to get to the king when I am not. I must know that." So the father says, I know you're not going to believe me, but you see my little boy sitting there in the corner, that little kid eating ice cream with chocolate ice cream all over his nice white shirt, not waiting for the party to begin. My son Yankala, he got me out of jail." And the minister looks at him and says, "If you don't want to tell me, don't tell me. But don't make up any stupid stories. That little boy did not get you out of anywhere. So this friendship is over. You don't want to tell me who he is for real? We're done." And he walks away. Who walks in number two? The lawyer. The lawyer walks in and says, "Who's a greater lawyer? I played golf with the king. They told me he's going to war. Who? I heard the king came to jail and got you out. Who brought the king to jail to get you out? Is there a lawyer that the king's using that I don't know about?" And he says, "This is going to be very hard to explain, but you see that little kid who now just finished his ice cream cone? My son Yankala? He got me out." And the lawyer's like, "I played golf with the king and I couldn't get to see him, and you're telling me that little kid got you out? You know what? You don't want to tell me who it is? I'm done." And people start coming to this meal and everyone wants to know. So you make the student sit, "Oh, who got you out?" And he keeps telling people that it's his son. And they're all looking at him like, "You have this big secret and you don't want to give up your guy in the government." So all of a sudden, all his friends are not being his friends anymore because they think he's lying. All of a sudden, the king walks in. The king walks in. He runs over to the little boy. He picks him up. And he says, "Yankala, how are you?" And he gives him a hug and a kiss. And everybody's watching this. And they realize that this kid has a relationship with the king that nobody else has. And I'm telling this to this little boy. And I'm like, "Listen to me carefully. The tefillah in a sinner is a password to open up all kinds of things for you." I said, "But sitting at the edge of your bed at night or in the morning, but specifically in the morning, when you wake up, I just want you to say one prayer a day. Modeh ani lefanecha, melechai v'kayim, thank you, I admit to you, thank you, melechai v'kayim, the king that is everlasting," right? Modeh ani lefanecha, melechai v'kayim. Shechazata bi nishmati, thank you for giving me back my life, my neshama, my life. V'chemla, with love, rabbi munasecha, many are your believers. Is there any request in Modeh ani for anything? Nope. Are you asking for food? A shidduch? Health? Nothing. The first thing you do when you open your eyes in the morning, you're that little boy. "Good morning. Thank you very much. You are the greatest king. Chai v'kayav, melechai v'kayav. And thank you for giving me my life. Bye. I'm going to the bathroom. Go to the bathroom, wash my hands. I'm done." We don't have to wear a yarmulke when we wake up in the morning to say Modeh ani. You don't wash your hands yet. You didn't go to the bathroom yet. You're uchi. Your mouth is uchi. You didn't wash your hands. You have to go to the bathroom. Why would you say a tefillah at that point? And the answer is that the first thing in the morning we say to Hashem is what this little boy said. Now, how do you say Modeh ani? Modeh ani lefanecha. Thank you, Hashem, that I got up this morning. People don't get up. That I can see, that, right? With love. So, if Chas v'Shalom, that girl or boy who gets up every morning and says Modeh ani with happiness and love and energy, that night she went out, she thought she was getting engaged, and he said, "I want to be your friend. Thank you very much." Right? Or a bad deal that day, or someone's sick in the hospital, and You get up in the morning and you just can't give that molda ani that you always give because you're struggling. And you're like, one thing, okay, bye. HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his malachim, he's like, one second. Fridala, this little girl, every day, it's the one thing I'm looking for. She doesn't ask me for anything. The rest of the day, everyone's praying. I Rafeinu and Ashivenu and Slachlanu and Parnasa and Bracha and I need this and I need the whole day. All we do is ask and we ask and we ask. It's a shopping list. God gets a lot of shopping lists. Right? Whole day we ask. But in the morning, this girl gets up every morning and all she says is thank you. And this and thank you and you're the greatest king. So when she doesn't say it, Hashem's like, no, what's going on? Malachim, let's go down and find out what's bothering her. I look forward my whole day as this little girl who gets up, this little boy who says Mudani with Kavana. Today he's not. Something's going on. Hashem himself will go into the prison that you are stuck in and take you out. So I told this little boy, that's Moda Ani. That's the story of the king. Sometimes you can go to the biggest tzaddik, you can be in the biggest minion, but there is a wall in Shemayim, a fence called a Kor Barzel, a fence made out of steel where Atzilus gets stuck. Since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it gets stuck. The Satan has, the Prime Minister has this wall of steel, so to say, where it gets stuck. The only place that's not closed is the Shari Dima, or a place that cries, but not everyone is able to cry. So how do we circumvent, right? You couldn't get past the Prime Minister. And sometimes the greatest rabbi can't get past the Prime Minister, but the little teeny kid, the little neshama, he's not a big lawyer, and he's not a big minister, but it's someone who's excited about davening, and he davens every single day when you don't daven, when you're not happy. Hashem's like, but that's my ray of sunshine every day. This little girl, Chavi, she's my ray of sunshine. If she's not happy, I'm not happy. So Malachim, whatever dungeon she's in, whatever depression she's in, let's go get her. I said to this boy, that's a different tefillah, and that everyone can do. I understand you have a problem reading, you have a problem understanding, but that everyone do. My minig that I do every single morning for many, many years. I do not walk out of my house. I get to the door, I open the front door, and I put my hand on the mezuzah, and the first thing I say is, thank you, Hashem, that I could feel the mezuzah, that it's cold and it's metal, whatever it is. Thank you that my hands can feel. Thank you for the great gift of touch. And I close my eyes and I say, thank you very much, Hashem, for the gift of smell. And I give a nice smell right now. It's amazing on my block because it's shua's time that we have all these purple lilacs. And they have a crazy smell. So I'm like, wow, what an unbelievable smell that you're able to smell. A lot of people have allergies and their noses are stuffed. If you can't smell, you don't have an appetite. Ask anybody who has terrible allergies and they're stuffed, they're not eating. They eat a little bit, they're not eating, they don't have an appetite. If you can't smell, if your nose is stuffed, you can't smell, you don't have an appetite. Well, thank you, Kodesh Baruch Hu, that I can smell, that I can breathe. I remember when I was in the hospital, there was an oxygen mask in my nose. And it was like the most annoying thing to have those two little things in my nose. I don't have an oxygen mask. I can breathe. Thank you, Hashem, that I can smell. Thank you, Hashem. I just had a coffee before I went out. Thank you, Hashem, that I can taste. Because if you can't taste, you also have no appetite. And then the big two. Thank you, Hashem, that I can hear. I do not leave my front door till I hear a chirping of a bird. I wait till I hear a bird. In the winter, sometimes I'm staying there for 12 hours. No, but like 12 seconds, 15 seconds. Till I hear the chirp of a bird. Thank you, Hashem, that I'm able to hear that. And the last thing, I open my eyes, and I'm like, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whoa. Thank you that I could see, because that's, you can't imagine living in a world of darkness all the time. It's not even imaginable. Thank you, I could see 5 senses. I thank him for all 5 senses, and I added to that, after I broke my knees 3 years ago, thank you, Hashem, I can move my hands and I can move my feet, because I don't want that to happen again either. I don't walk out until I say that. That's not in a sefer. That's not, I mean, even though we have Mabashe Rubim, Matir Surim, and all those brachas, it's a relationship. It's relationship. That's a tefillah. I'll tell you a story that just happened. So this past Shabbos, I was in a Hasidic Shabbaton that is sort of like Project Inspire for Hasidim. So we had all these different speakers. The only difference is, it's the first time I ever did a Hasidic Shabbos. My speech was Friday night from 2 o'clock a.m. till 3:15. No. Absolutely. Because they don't daven early. They daven the Zman. And then they had a speech by davening. And nobody's in a rush. Because in the afternoon they have Kugel and Cholent. So it's a different world. And then we went to eat. And there's Miris. And there's Tish. And nobody's in a rush. And I'm like, flying on my face because I just landed from Eretz Yisrael from a week of totally not sleeping. Right? And then they had a breakout. 7 different rooms, 7 different speakers. And Wallerstein, your speech, keynote, they called it, keynote, right? I wanted my key to my room, but they called it keynote because I was dead tired. 2 o'clock to 3:15. And not one of them was sleeping. The room was packed. Amazing. It was an amazing Shabbos. I davened 9 o'clock in the morning. I didn't get up to my room till 11 o'clock Matzah Shabbos. I didn't even get up to my room till 11 o'clock. It was off the charts. Okay? All my stuff. They don't know all my stories, Ruth. I got away with all my old stuff. You know what I'm saying? You know, school, first grade, third grade, all my stuff. But I said some new stuff. I said some new stuff. And I want to repeat something that I said. So, there were like 12 speakers, men and women. It was like the same thing as Project Inspire. You go to these different rooms. Baruch Hashem, I had keynotes. So I had this big room. I'm claustrophobic. And every room that they had the shiurim in had a mechitza. So it's not like Project Inspire. It had a mechitza, women on one side of mechitza, men on the other side of mechitza, in every single room, little teeny rooms, whatever. It was fantastic. Okay. So, we're trying, maybe, Shabbos Nachamu, we're working on something. We will have one, Emet Hashem, right? We're working on something.
Excuse me for asking.
Why not? It's Arnava. Have to have a Shabbaton. So we're working on it. It's a little hard because it's in the mountains. We'll see. We'll see what happens. If not, we'll mitzvah Hashem in November, December, whatever. But we're going to try. Anyway, so what happens Matzah Shabbos is we're all sitting at a table in the front table, Malava Malka, which also got finished at 4 in the morning. And so they said they wanted each rabbi, so there's 10 of us, so they want each rabbi to speak for 3 minutes. That's 30 minutes altogether. What you feel the Shabbos did, a chizik word in 3 minutes. I'm like, the worst. I'm thinking, I can't even introduce myself in 3 minutes. 3 minutes, I'll just say 3 minutes, right? And the one guy gets up, wow. 3 minutes, like a capsule. He spoke for 3 minutes and I was like, boom. And the next guy's like, boom. And I'm sitting there, I don't talk for 3 minutes. It's not what I do. And I'm thinking, what should I say? And I want to tell you what I said. It didn't take 3 minutes. It took two. I said the following story, which I never said here. So, I was 8th grade Rebbe Kranach Yeshiva for 30 years, and I spent a lot of time with the little kids downstairs. I like to talk to little kids, because little kids, first of all, they're very kadosh. They're just pure. And they're very funny, because they don't have a filter. So they just say the way things are. Sometimes it's very harsh, like there's a kid with a hearing aid, and they're like, what's that funny thing in your ear? Now, we would never say such a thing like that. So they talk like that. But they don't mean it. They don't mean it to be, they're just not filtered. They're unfiltered. So it's very interesting when you talk to people who are unfiltered. I mean, I told you the story. I went over to one little girl, and I said, who does your mother love the most in the world? I like doing this stuff. I like to get into people's heads. I'm like, who does your mother love the most in the world? She looks up at me. I'm thinking she's going to be like, me, right? She's going to say her. She goes, Ruchi. I'm like, what's your name? Miriam. I'm like, your mother doesn't love you the most in the world? No, Ruchi. So, of course, who's Ruchi? Your older sister, right? I'm like, for sure. I'm like, oh, so you have a sister named Ruchi? No. An aunt named Ruchi? No. And then I realized, of course, it's her grandmother. Her mother's mother. I'm like, your grandmother's name is Ruchi. No. I'm like, who's Ruchi? It's a true story. I'm like, Who's Ruchi? My mommy's best friend. I said, your mommy loves her best friend more than you? Yes. I said, how do you know? Because she's always on the phone with her. No filter. Mommies need to ask their kids, who do you think mommy loves the most? Because a lot of kids think, well, mommy's always on the phone, and a lot of tati says, he loves his business. I got a lot of that. He loves his work. They don't say business. He loves his work. I'm like, he loves his work more than you? Yeah. How do you know? Because he's always there. Kids say the way it is. So I went into the first grade many years ago, and there's one kid in that class. I'm looking at his face right now in my head. He just didn't have it together. I mean, his shirt and his sitzes were always hanging out. He always forgot his homework. His food was all over the place. He was just a mess. This kid was a mess. And he was a lot of the time in the office because he didn't bring his homework. He didn't bring his sign note for the log moment trip. I remember that I had to call his mother. He didn't bring his mother. He was just one of those schlumpy kids. And he wasn't very, very bright. He was just one of those, a little slow, a little this. But a really cute kid. I always like the kids that are not doing well. So I start off in the beginning of the class, and they have the rows, and I'm like, okay, first grade, Rabbi Wallerstein's here. Yay! All right. Chaim, where's Hashem? It's a true story. Where's Hashem? Hashem? He's there. Okay. Next one. Where's Hashem? And I'm sure if I did this in this class, well, so you say the same thing. Hashem is there. And I go through the next one, he goes, they know the song from kindergarten. Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is everywhere. Up, down, all around, right, left, right. Okay, you know the song. So once this kid sang the song, pretty much the rest of the class sang the song. I come to little Pinchas. We'll call him Penny. The last kid in the class, the schlump. I'm like, Penny, with Hashem. He looks at me. He blew me away. He goes, Hashem? Hashem is here. I said, where's Hashem? Hashem is here. I said, who told you that? I figured his mother, his father, whatever. He goes, nobody. I'm like, so how do you know Hashem is here? And he looks up in my eyes and he says, because I feel him here. This was the slowest kid in the class, because I feel him here. And I got up at this Malava Malka, and I said, before we came to this Shabbos, it's a new organization, it's called V'kei Rav Tanu. V'kei Rav Tanu is for Hasidim, sort of the same as Project Inspire, to get inspired, right? I said, before I came here, Hashem was there, Hashem was there, Hashem was there, Hashem was there, Hashem was here. But at this point, Hashem was everywhere, but now we took everywhere and we brought it into here. Because Hashem being there makes him far away. Makes him someone who created the world. What do I have to do with him? So in first grade it starts. The way we teach our children, and I promise you, if I went into the streets and I asked adults, where's Hashem? They would go, what are you talking about? In Shemayim. Oh, Baruch Rai Fechayim, Rabbi Friedman. Baruch Rai Fechayim. Good just to see you smiling. It means Baruch Rai Fechayim. It starts when you're very young that Hashem is there. Oh, he's there, so that has a lot of connotations. If he's there and I'm here, he's not exactly here with me. There's no Hashkocha practice. He's not really watching me. He's in Shemayim. He's there. That's what we learn. This little boy, Penny, taught me. No. Hashem is here. He's not there. He's in every nefesh. Every soul, every neshama that we have is part of him. So what we need to do, we're coming to Shavuos. We're coming to the wedding, right? Coming to Shavuos next week, Friday night. Next week, actually, Matzah Shabbos, but Shabbos is connected to it. What we need to do, maybe in the next 10 days, is take Hashem from right, left, up, and down, take him from all around, and bring him here. Because when he's here, you can feel him, says Pinchas. When he's there, you can't feel him. You might understand him mentally. You may have emuna. But this little boy was saying, Rabbi Wallerstein, when you carry God in your soul, in your heart, you can feel him. Imagine a little boy, what's a first grader? 7? And he's telling me, how do I know? Like, what do you mean, how do I know? I feel him. Wow. That was my 2-minute speech. That was my 2-minute speech. I said, guys, I can't tell you more than that. The Kerev Tanu means to bring him Korah, to bring him close. And it's already all over, I don't know, somebody told me it's all over FaceTime or for whatever. Somebody was taping it and it's like flying all over the place. So Pinchas. What? Oh, you heard it in my shir. I said it in my shir. That was yesterday, last night's shir. Right. That was last night's shir. So that's very, very, very big. Okay. I want to tell you another story. Ooh, wow, time's flying. I want to tell you a story that I heard this Shabbos from a Hasidic shaman. An unbelievable story. And he told me he knows for a fact that this is a true story. He knows the people that were involved. So in Europe, before the Holocaust, in a very poor town in Poland, they were very poor. So there was one man in town that was not so poor, but most of the town were peasants. The mamash didn't have any money. And this father went ahead, and it was, in those days it was a big thing, not like today, you get 100, you get 100 pairs of shoes. The father, this boy, his son had shoes, but it was Poland and very cold in the winter. So he bought his son a pair of new boots, which was an iPhone in those days. A pair of boots was, in the winter for a boy, was like, you know, you wore it till your toes were coming out of the front. Okay, he buys it for his son. 2 days after he buys it for his son goes to school. Two days after his son takes his shoes with him to school, and he comes back in his shoes instead of his boots. So the father says to the boy, his son, where are your boots? I just bought you new boots. He said, well, Tati, there's a boy in my class, and his father died, and they have no money, they have no food, and his shoes have big holes, and my shoes don't have big holes. So I gave him my boots. So the father didn't know what to do. He could tell him, get back your boots. It's very bad chinuch. But he just bought him a pair of boots, and for them that money was kadosh. He decided, you know what? Chinuch, I'm not. So my son will wear the shoes. And every time he's freezing in his shoes, he remember that he did chesed. I'm not asking for it back. Okay? Next year, he buys his kid a new coat. It's a true story. He buys his kid a new coat. 2 days later, he comes home without his coat. The father says to the kid, where's your coat? He says, remember the boy I gave my boots to? I have a sweater, Tati, and I have a jacket from, you know, last year. He has nothing. He doesn't even have a sweater. He's freezing. I gave him my coat. That's getting a little ridiculous for the father. He bought him boots, he gave away his boots. He bought him a coat, he gave away his coat. What's he going to do? You tell him to give back the coat. The kid's telling you, this kid's freezing. He didn't have money to buy another coat. Nope. So the kid wore a sweater with another sweater with his ripped old coat. That's what it was. One day the boy comes home, we gave away the boots, gave away the coat, and he says, this boy who's so poor, his mother just passed away. And he doesn't have a place to sleep. He has no parents. Could he stay with us? And the father's like, at this point, there was no room in their house. They didn't have money to support another kid. So the father says to his son, that I can't do. Maybe he can find someone else in yeshiva in the class that could take him in. I can't take him in. We don't have room. We have girls. I can't have a boy. Whatever. I can't take him in. Mm-hmm. That night, his son doesn't come home. And he starts panicking. It gets dark. It's in Poland. It gets dark. He's thinking his son got kidnapped, whatever it is. The son is missing. His son didn't come home from yeshiva. So they start looking for him, for this kid. They find him in the shul, midnight. They played the whole place thought he was kidnapped. They find him in the shul, in the Ezras Nashim, in the women's part, sleeping on a bench together with this kid. So that this kid shouldn't sleep alone. Yeah? Unbelievable. This little boy, unbelievable. Okay. War happens, the Holocaust happens. The poor boy, who didn't have the boots and didn't have anything, moves to America. The other boy, right, they both make it out through the Holocaust. He ends up going to Eretz Yisrael. The one who goes to America who was poor becomes very wealthy. The one who went to Eretz Yisrael, who gave the boots away, ended up becoming a yeshiva man and very frum and had like eight, nine kids, lived in a nothing. He had no money, whatever it is. He used to sit and learn, and he had a few prutas. His wife worked as a teacher, whatever it was. One day, into the yeshiva, this guy's learning in yeshiva, Panovich, I don't know where he's learning. One day, an American walks in and says, so-and-so by his last name, Lefkowitz, whatever the name is he in this yeshiva? I heard he's in this yeshiva. Yes. He's sitting over there in that shtender, guy, black, you know, whatever, not dressed, whatever. He walks over to me, says, Yechaim Moskowitz, right? He says, yes, I am Chaim Moskowitz. Who are you? He says, I'm Hershkowitz. Remember, we were in yeshiva together before the Holocaust in Poland? You bought me a pair of boots, and then you gave me a jacket. You remember when we slept together, and your father was freaking out, and he couldn't find us, and we were in the Ezra's Nashim in Shul? He goes, I can't believe it. I was worried about you. I didn't even know that you made it out of the war. He says, come outside. I want to talk to you. It's a true story. He takes him outside. He says, I knew that you were here. I knew that you were alive. I knew you were here. I never got a chance to come to you. But now I want to tell you something. I made a lot of money. He says, and I'm not taking no for an answer. He said, you have 9 children. I'm making 9 chasanas for you. Not only am I making 9 chasanas for you, I'm buying you the clothing for every, if it's your daughter, your son, whoever needs it for the family, for each wedding. I am buying all the clothing for that wedding. You gave me your boots, and you gave me your coat. And in Eretz Yisrael, you can't rent a dira, you have to buy a dira. He said, and I will buy every single one of your children an apartment when they get married, because that night you slept with me, and you didn't let me be alone. I am never going to let you be alone. But Kachoya, he made 9 weddings. The clothing, the wedding, every single kid got a dira. So you think, wow, it's an amazing story. But I'm going to tell you something, because I like to think about things, that what's amazing about the story is not what you think is amazing about the story. What's amazing about this story is the father of the kid who gave away the boots. Because had he made him give back the boots, this would have never happened. So what did he do? He understood that to be mechanech my child, even though I just bought him a pair of boots, and he just gave away a pair of boots. But if I'm going to take it back, I'm going to teach my child not to share. So it cost him, what did he lose? $5? $10? How much did the boots cost? He lost $10. How much did the coat lose? $50. He lost $60. And he must have felt bad. I went ahead, I have no money, I bought this for my child, and he gives it away. $60 he lost, which in those days was a lot of money. What did Hashem give him back? Hundreds of thousands of dollars, $1 million. What happened? What did he get back? This is the grandfather. In other words, the father of the boy who gave away the shoes is the grandfather of all those chasen and kalas. So he gave away $60, and his grandchildren got millions, clothing, everything. Why? Because he understood that chinuch comes before my personal want and needs. In other words, the reaction of me would have been to my daughter, it's very nice, but don't give away the stuff I owe you a pair of boots. Don't give away your boots. Right? That would have been my reaction. It would have been a totally wrong reaction, because if that's what you do, then okay, then I don't have to ever give away anything. It's such a godless a guy. One of the people that were there said over the story, and I was sitting there and I'm saying, the godless is the kid, I understand. It's a big thing. But I can understand a kid who sees someone without boots. Okay, take my boots. Money's not a big deal. But the father who bought his kid new boots, who must have been so excited that the little money that he had, he put it together and I bought my son shiny boots. I'm going to see my son in a new pair of boots. So happy. And then his son comes home in shoes, in dirty shoes, and he gave away the boots that I bought from him. And for him to walk away from that and not take the boots back, that's the godless. The adult, because the child's a child, but the adult. That's what happens when you have Hashem here, by the way. You know, Hashem, yeah, that's how you act. It's a different... You know, Hashem's there, it's like, okay, Hashem wants me to give chesed, tzedakah. But when he's here, you a person acts totally different. So, what I want you to take away from this shir is there's so many skulas. People do so many skulas for shiduchim and for panasa and for other things. We go to all kinds of mukubalim and we say all kinds of prayers and shir hashirim. And don't get me wrong, skulas are big. But sometimes skulas can't get through the wall of steel. But a relationship with Hashem is much bigger than any skula you'll ever have. So if you wake up every single morning excited that you have a day of life, and you show your excitement by saying Moda Ani with Kavana, excited, sit at the edge of your bed, you know, there's no one else in the room that's going to think you're crazy, and if you're married, so you know, your husband will think you're a little bit cuckoo, and you're like, thank you Hashem, I love you, you're the man, this is great, I can see, I can talk, I can walk, I can think, I can move my hands, I can smell, unbelievable. 2 minutes ago, I was a body in a bed, snoring, doing nothing. Not smelling, not seeing, not hearing, not talking, nothing. The 6 years of death. I was a golem. Golem, a piece of clay laying in a bed. Did I see anything while I was sleeping? No. Did I smell anything while I was sleeping? No. Did I hear anything while I was sleeping? No. Did I feel anything while I was sleeping? No. Did I taste anything while I was sleeping? No. So from 1 second, where you're a golem, you don't have any of the five senses, none of them, in 1 second you open your eyes and you have all five. So a person who appreciates that, who gets up in the morning, like, whoa, fingers, hands, feet. You know when you lay on your arm and it falls asleep and you think that it may never come back. You are panicking. You're like, come on, where are the needles? Come on, needles. Go, come on, where are the needles? Oh, my God. I hope I didn't have a stroke while I was sleeping. You get all these crazy thoughts, like, because your hand is dead. And you're like, I don't feel it. I don't feel it. Right? And then you get those needles. Ow, ow. But, you know, get your hand back. Pain means you're alive. Rabbi Gamliel always says that. Dead people feel no pain. He says, sometimes in pain, it's something to thank Hashem. If I have pain, it means I'm alive. We don't want it. That's not the best way of finding out you're alive. But that's one way of knowing that you're alive. So a person who wakes up, you don't need no schoolers. A person who wakes up every morning with that love and that excitement, if you don't wake up because you're having a problem finding your shidduch, or you're struggling in parnasa, or you don't feel well, and you're like, you just can't get that power and that energy and that thank you. Hashem's like, what's going on with my girl? He brings down the malachim every morning to see this human being who goes from a goyim to like a malach, to a person who's jumping up and down and all excited. And now all of a sudden she's not. So like the newspaper boy, what's wrong? And if Klai Yisrael would do that as a whole, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would come into the prison, the dungeon that we're in, because we keep trying to get through the Kor HaBazel. We're not the little boy, but if we become the little boy, then he would come into the dungeon personally and take us out. And bring Mashiach, we should all be Zaycha to see that.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.